it's time for another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And we always introduce ourselves
yes.
in the same way. I was listening to like some old episodes and I edited them like, our intro is not very fancy.
No. Like,
here we are.
It's straight to the point. We're here and yeah, we're the same people we were yesterday.
That's okay because... I don't know. I don't have anything.
Yeah, it's just okay because it's...
Wherever you go, there
yeah.
you are.
Yeah, wherever you go, there you are.
But so how's it going?
It's going good. Weather's been weird lately. I'm hoping Halloween is good weather, but it's 50% chance of rain. But then again...
That's every day in Texas.
I know, but I really don't want it to rain. I took
it
time...
It rained last year on Halloween.
It did. But it stopped. It stopped right before trick-or-treating time.
I don't know. I remember running with the kids to get back inside last year.
Really? So, maybe it was just different sides of town. Scattered showers, probably.
I was only like 5 minutes from your parents' house. I went to my brother's last year.
That's so true.
It was raining.
Yeah, that's not far. But I'm optimistic. I'm hoping that everything is fine because I took time to make fog chillers this year so that my fog machines, you know, just work a whole lot better. I get a whole lot more out of them. And I'm going to have digital decorations in the yard, and I can't have my projector getting wet. Because I tested it out yesterday. I had my parents turn the lights off at their home, and I projected it on the wall, and Luke was not having it. My mom was like, turn that off. You're scaring Luke.
What's on these digital projections?
Oh, it's a ghostly apparition, and it looks like a little girl. Come play with me.
Oh,
and then
well,
she
no wonder freaking him out.
Disappears, comes back. With like this demonish face and pops out. It's a guy taking his head off or his head falls off. And yeah. So they're pretty scary. This isn't the stuff you get from like Home Depot or like Kroger, your department store where, you know, you have like a USB drive and it has like little skeletons in the window or stuff like that. These are Atmosphere Effects DVDs. It's the same stuff that they use in Haunted. Like little haunted exhibits and stuff like that. So, yeah, they're legit. They're legitimately scary. And I have them hooked up to like a PA speaker so that you can feel the sound.
Poor Luke.
Yes.
Well, we went to a little Halloween party last night that I got drugged to.
Hell yeah.
But
Sounds like it.
They had like a haunted house at it for the kids. And Michael, he's scared of it. He won't do it.
Yeah.
Like, well, I can't say I won't either. I'm not really into the haunted house thing. But Wyatt went through it with Mary, and he just sort of looked at him like, you better not get near me. He toughed it out, though. He's a tough little kid.
That's good.
And, but other than that, it was scary. Okay. Yeah, he was telling us it was scary. And but other than that, it was okay. We had a nice day. A very long day yesterday. We had karate in the morning, football. Birthday party for my nephew, then Halloween party, so it was a very long Saturday.
Yeah, usually you can pop in a recording on a Saturday, and I didn't realize how busy you are. You're like, oh, I'm driving, had to call you, and I'm like, dang, you're
up
on the road.
We had a 1 o'clock game, we had an afternoon game, so, and, but, you know, it was a busy day.
All good.
And, so that's okay. But now I can rest. I'm on vacation from work this week.
Heck so. Yeah, me too.
Oh, you're off too?
Yeah, I'm off too. So. I know we took it off for different reasons.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, Stroh's probably going to be in the World Series. You know.
That was an epic fail.
Yeah, it was an epic fail. And then I was like, you know, I just like to have, you know, Halloween off. And I was just like, you know, I had a week
before the Astros have been good the last couple of years, I've kind of always either taken the last full week of October, the first, or Halloween. I've usually always taken this week off.
So, yeah.
You know, just get that break in before the holiday season. So, you know, but it is the end of October almost. It's October 27th today, 28th. And we've been doing Halloween horrors all month, so we're getting towards the end of our run of our Halloween movies. And it's not to say we won't do horror movies throughout the year. We just wanted to make October focused on some
yes,
good, scary
focused.
Movies. And we'll talk about those in a minute. But as always, we always start the show with a download this, where we talk about what we've streamed and watched. And my download this will not suck this week for once.
There
you know.
We go.
But I guess I'll start since I'm already talking.
Go for it.
Man, I dived into Daredevil Season 3 finally.
Yes.
And, man, that show, you know, all these cancellations of Luke Cage and Iron Fist, it doesn't really bother me, but I hope that they can continue to make I don't want it to go on forever, but I would like to see a good four or five solid seasons of Daredevil. Right now, Charlie Cox is saying he doesn't know yet if they're going to do a season four. You know, a lot's going on with Disney moving to their streaming service and stuff, but I'm only three episodes in, but it's so good. It's adapting some very popular comic book storylines and loosely, you know, because they never do it frame by frame of the show, but they're adapting some ideas from the very popular storyline called Born Again and from Guardian Devil. Where Matt Murdock's faith is tested. You know, and one thing about Daredevil is it's, and I was so glad when they did this show that in the comics, Matt's a Catholic and he's believes in his faith very strongly. And he always struggles with if he's doing the right thing as a vigilante. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm glad they didn't shy away from that in the show because, you know, nowadays these TV shows and movies sometimes try to be politically correct and you don't want to,
you don't want to put religion stuff because
people might look at it. And Daredevil hasn't shied away from that, and because it's such an important aspect of Matt's character in order to make him have the strong Catholic faith that he has. And Daredevil handles it so well, and the show has been so good through the first two seasons. Season three has not started off any less stellar. It's been really good so far. They're introducing Poindexter, which, of course, everybody knows is Bullseye.
Yeah.
And that's... looks like it's going to be a definitive version of Bullseye. And Vincent D'Onofrio just continues to absolutely own it as Wilson Fisk. It was almost like the role he was born to play.
He's a really good actor. And it just, you know, him doing, you know, he's played a variety of roles. I mean, he was the psychopath in Full Metal Jacket, and he went on to Men in Black. He did The Cell in the early 2000s with Jennifer Lopez. And then,
that was a weird
movie. Yeah, that was a really weird movie, which it's on free on Amazon, but it just looked kind of weird to me, and I decided to watch something different.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
And then he was, you know, in the CI, the Criminal Investigation Unit, in the Law & Order series, where he was really good. And I'm glad that, you know, he found a niche somewhere in the Marvel Universe.
And he really loves it. He's already said, you know, if Marvel if the MCU wants him in a movie, a Spider-Man movie, like he said, just say the word, I'll do it.
Damn.
Yeah, he really,
yes.
He's into it. And, you know, so and Daredevil Season 3 has been really good so far. And so I'm sure, I know you, have you checked it out yet?
I have prepped to binge watch it.
Yeah.
I bought I know this is horrible, but I bought a bag of pepperoni rolls, and I got like a 2 liter of cola, and I'm gonna binge watch Daredevil tonight.
It's kind of
mark
hard to
my
watch
words.
13 hours in one sitting, though.
You underestimate my power. I'm like, what meme am I thinking of right now? I was like,
I mean, it's
yes.
Okay to do an episode a night over 13 days. It's okay.
Is it though?
Yeah.
Is it okay though?
So.
I guess it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to sit in one sitting and kill yourself doing it.
Do you, though? You kind of do.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
But, so, that's really all I've watched this week as far as new stuff, but I had to get into it because I've always, as much as I love Batman and Wolverine and some of my favorite characters, I've always really liked the character of Daredevil. I've always found it to be an interesting concept that Stan Lee and the guys created back in the day, that a character is blind whose senses are enhanced through an accident, and when Daredevil is really well written, he's one of the better written characters out there in comics. So
yeah, he's a lot of homage to his, you know, his dad, you know, and it's like he lost his dad at a young age, and you know, a lot of people that resonates with them.
And people can knock it for saying this. I don't think the Affleck movie's that terrible. There's things in that I like.
Yeah.
You know, that they got right with Daredevil. And there's things that aren't so good in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was when Marvel and, you know, Fox, they weren't quite sure how to make comic book movies yet.
Yeah, they were still, you know, we had to go through those movies to get what
to where
we have now. Yeah.
To get the Daredevil we have on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Exactly right. And, so, you know, more to it. I hope it continues on for a couple more seasons, and I've got to finish this season, see how it all plays out. I have a feeling, from what I know about the Guardian Devil and Born Again storylines, is that Matt might be facing some tragedy this season.
Yeah.
So we'll see. You know, and so what have you watched, downloaded, streamed this week?
I was just scrolling the Prime videos this week, and I saw that Prom Night was free. The Jamie Lee Curtis, the good one, you know, from 1980, which was made in Canada, had a budget of about $1.5 million, grossed about $14.5 million, and, you know, actually Canada didn't want anything to do with that movie, but they released it anyways, ended up doing really good, and it was the best movie that year, and one of the top movies of the 80s as far as, you know, gross profit and that's concerned. Jamie Lee Curtis, of course, stars in it, and there's a lot of, you know, 80s horror, you know, instances in there where you have kids messing around in a van, smoking weed, and then the killer shows up, stabs someone in the neck. It's a really good story. Basically, think about I Know What You Did Last Summer. This is probably the movie that inspired I Know What You Did Last Summer. Someone witnesses an accident whenever they're younger, comes back when they're older on the anniversary, which is prom night, and decides to kill off the four people that witnessed said accident. That's all I'll tell you, because you got to go watch it. It's way better than the 2008 version where they tried to make it where this pedophile was, you know, just obsessed with this girl's family and then killed her family.
A lot of these horror remakes in the last 15 years have been, how gross can we make it?
Yes.
How gory? How fucked up can we make it?
Basically.
You know, and that's where that comes from. You know, it seems like they've lost focus on how to make something scary in a way without being disgusting.
Exactly. And in the right ways. We want it a little disgusting, but not based off of disgustingness.
And speaking of horror, I forgot I have been watching this, so I'm download this.
Yeah.
I've been watching Eli Roth's The History of Horror on AMC.
Okay.
It's been a little documentary that AMC's been putting on Monday
Eli Roth
during October, and he goes through, the first episode is about the history of zombies and movies and television, and then a couple episodes of slashers, and I think the next episode is going to be like demonic possessions and things
nice.
Like that. And it's been pretty good. It's actually it's very Walking Dead heavy because AMC owns it. Like the zombie episode shows a lot of Walking Dead stuff.
Yeah.
But
makeup's really good.
It's really
Walking
well
Dead,
done short documentary. A lot of good interviews with Greg Nicotero and Tom Savini, guys that grew up doing these zombie and horror films and things like that. And so it's been on AMC. I'm sure it's on people's on demand if they have whatever television provider.
You have to check that out.
And it's been pretty cool. And been watching that on AMC. Eli Roth's The History of Horror. It's been on AMC this month for October.
Nice.
I don't know how many episodes it is. I imagine it's only four or five. I don't think you can do a super long documentary.
It seems
series.
Like it's just a Halloween-based one.
Like
yes,
the October thing. So, anything else besides prom night?
I also, you know, of course, I do voodoo. I don't know if you were able to check out Ant-Man and Wasp.
Is that why my arm voodoo? Is that why my arm was hurting?
Yes, probably.
Oh man, you were voodooing me.
but the voodoo app, you could. I went ahead and I pre-ordered Incredibles 2. And I pre-ordered Teen Titans Go, which is now available digitally.
This week, I'm going to watch Ant-Man, Wasp, and Incredibles while I'm off.
Okay, cool.
And
because I have them, I have them now.
I told the boys I'm going to buy Teen Titans Go, but I will probably watch it too.
Yeah.
Well, I may go buy it Tuesday when it comes out.
I never watched it, so it was pretty good. It was pretty good. I like that they showed the old ones.
People, we've got some Teen Titans news coming up later in News Briefs.
Yeah.
People, really knock Teen Titans Go because they just brush it off as silly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so meta and so aware of itself that if you really pay attention to it, it's so smartly written at times and actually really funny.
I was one of those non-believers. Yeah. I grew up with, you know, Tara Strong and the gang, you know, that the animation that happened, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010, those Teen Titans. I really liked those episodes, and it was really good. And then when this came out, I was like, I cast it off, and I was like, oh, it's something for, like, you know, 7-8-year-olds, whatever.
Yeah.
But then I watched it, and
episodes,
it's actually...
And there are episodes that are like that are more kiddish, but there are some episodes that are really like, wow, that was good.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you go in, you know, I went in expecting it to be like those episodes, fairly serious, going along with, you know, certain comic book lines, and I'm like, you know, some episodes are just, you know, Robin eating spicy food and how he can't handle, like, a drop of spice.
Right.
And I was like, what the heck is this? I was like, there's no Teen Titans action, but you know what, it is what it is, and I actually like it for what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's, you know, I like that they showed the older ones in the you know, in the movie at the end. That was pretty cool,
and that will lead into our news later.
Yeah,
but yeah,
and so good movie. Glad I was able to watch it along with the other ones.
That show doesn't always get enough credit for the smartness of it sometimes. Like,
mm-hmm.
they've done a Goonies spoof episode. They've done Oh man, you name it. They've done all kinds of spoof episodes, just really smartly written. I see written.
The story
and,
in
your
eyes.
And the original Teen Titans was a little silly at times too, but yeah, it had a serious tone to it.
They did that musical episode where they're like, that's probably my favorite one. The Night Begins to Shine. Yeah, The Night Begins to Shine.
Run around the house singing.
Yes.
All the time.
It's pretty awesome. It reminded me of like if Tenacious D were superheroes and they had to use music to defeat their enemies.
But it's a good show. And like I said, we've got some Teen Titans news later. We'll talk a little more Teen Titans here towards the end of the show. So
yeah,
stay tuned.
That's about all I got for Download This.
Yeah. So yeah. Some movies and some movies.
Yeah, movies and movies. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Watching that History of Horror show, and they were showing clips from Halloween, and I was like, man, Jamie had it going on.
She did, man.
I mean, she was for, you know, like that kind of a hippie/70s love child girl look.
Yeah.
She had it going on.
And then she reminded us that she still had it going on in True Lies.
Yeah.
That was, right. She was like, she could be so hot if she wanted to, you know, Bill Paxton says.
Right. So, I haven't watched Halloween. That's on my goal this week, too, on my DVR while I'm off work.
Yes.
So, Naomi.
Naomi.
Get it watched.
Give him one more week.
She texted me the other day. Now, get on watching Halloween, so I'm working on it. But, all right. Well, let's get into today's featured film for our final episode of Halloween Horrors month of October. And, we started out the month with The Creature from the Black Lagoon and The Wolfman, a little double feature from a couple of Universal classics and really good movies from their time and still hold up well today. Then we went into High Gear with a really darker Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
Where Freddy Krueger and his unleashing of his dream nightmares and killing teens in their dreams. And then we went to a artsy, really well-acted, well-written vampire film called Let the Right One In, which is just such a remarkable little film. And now we're going to do something kind of fun and kind of could be a Christmas movie, but I think it leans more towards a Halloween movie. And we're going to talk Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas today.
Yes.
Which has become a classic in the 25 years since it's been released, actually. And when this came out in 1993, you know, Disney, they had distribution rights to it. They were going to release it as a Disney animated feature, but when they saw the cut, they were like, oh, it's too dark. Excuse me. So they released it under the Touchstone Pictures banner. They didn't know how to market it. And a lot of people believe that Tim Burton directed this, and he didn't.
He did not.
It was directed by Henry Selick.
Selick, yep.
And but Burton came up with the idea for the story, and he helped get it made, even though he was producer by name mostly. He was hardly on set. So they
5 days total in 2 years.
Let's market it with Tim Burton's name. And that's what they did, and it ended up it actually was pretty successful at the box office, like $71 million on a $30 million budget, I think, around there,
because
The film's all stop motion animation, took like almost 2 to 3 years to make.
100 people in 2 years,
and so it did have some instant success, and now years later, Disney has, especially back a few years ago, the 20th anniversary, owned up to. I need to drink a drink here.
Like Evan Baxter from Bruce Almighty.
Oh man, something was in my throat.
I think my co-anchor needs some water.
So, you know, Disney has now embraced it as one of their classics, and it doesn't count in their animated, their 35 animated films or whatever. But they have released it as their own now. If you watch Nightmare Before Christmas now, it has the Disney logo at the beginning of it.
Yeah.
Current Blu-ray and DVD releases are all done by Disney. So Disney has embraced this film now as they've grown up a little bit and realized it's okay to make a bit of a darker film. But so when was your first time you saw The Nightmare Before Christmas?
Oh, I'm pretty sure I saw it pretty close to when it came out. I mean, 1993, you know, I was 7 years old. I knew I saw it around then, or maybe when I was 8 or 9 at least. I knew I had to wait until it came into video, because we had the video. I know I did not see it in theaters, but I always, you know, remember liking the beginning song and the boogie song. Mm-hmm. And those were my favorite, you know, memories as a kid watching it. You were probably old enough to remember it. Did you see it in theaters?
Well, I remember it coming out, but I don't think I saw it in theaters. This came out in 93. I'm in the middle of high school. I'm like, oh, it's a kid film. That's not
true.
Know? So I kind of dismissed it, and I remember watching it on home video also. And thinking it was okay, you know. I think I more probably still at that point thought, oh, my parents are renting this for the kids to watch. You know, my brother and sister were a little older than me, and you know, and I didn't hate it, didn't like it. I think this is a movie that's grown on me more over the years. I still maybe don't love it as much as some people, you know. Like I know my wife really likes this movie a lot, But I like the movie, but I don't love it. You know, it's a fun little musical Halloween Christmas movie, but I do think it's more of a Halloween film because it certainly has the darker tones in it more than it has the lighter Christmas tones. And that's why I think it leans more towards a Halloween movie. And I think it's remarkably animated.
Some
incredible shots, incredible stop motion, well done for its time. You look at what Leica Studios is doing now with Kubo and the Two Strings and stuff like that. And this movie was made 25 years ago, and it still looks almost as good as the Leica stuff does today. And it's really well done. And music-wise, Danny Elfman does an incredible job with the songs and stuff he created for it.
And singing.
Yeah. And so overall, my first memories are just kind of dismissing it as a kid film, but it was kind of the time I grew up in. I was more watching the 90s action stuff at the time.
That's
the
true.
Face-offs and the Con Airs and the things like that. So this was no big deal to me, and I think I like this movie more now that I have children of my own, and I appreciate it a lot more. And I do think it is a really good film. It's a bit jumpy, a bit quick.
Yeah.
I was realizing when I rewatched it.
It does go fast.
I'm kind of like, man, this movie's kind of quick, even for a kid's film. But it's okay because it keeps your attention span.
Yes,
you know, like you have to watch. My 3-year-old loves it. He watched it like 3 times the other night. And so I think that helps it in that case because it is essentially a kid's film, even though we're adults watching and reviewing on a podcast.
Yeah. Do you have the 2008 version, the with the special edition Christopher Lee reading the original poem?
I don't know. I might. It's got the box I have has Jack's face on it, so it might be. But I don't have a Blu-ray. I have it on DVD.
Okay.
So it could have Christopher Lee on there. I didn't look at the special features.
Yeah, yeah. The 2008 version, if you have the 20-year anniversary, 25th year anniversary, sorry, then that one has the Christopher Lee.
Okay. Well, I've had this longer. Well, this year's the 25th anniversary. Sorry. I've had my copy longer. So
15-year anniversary. Yeah. 15-year anniversary.
I don't know which version I have. I have to look at it.
Yeah. It's really cool. I mean, it's a bit lengthy. I mean, it's a 3-page poem that, you know, eventually inspired it.
Was it the poem originally, was it written by Burton or he found
it? It was written by Burton in the 80s, whenever he first started working as an animator for Disney. And, you know, he saw, you know, the Halloween decorations coming down and the Christmas decorations coming up in the front of this department store. There's like a little showcase in the front window, and he saw goblins with Santa Claus and the reindeer, and that's what inspired him. He's like, hey, this would look, you know, this is interesting, you know, and he wrote a poem about it, a very lengthy poem, which I thought about, you know, having down and then maybe reading it, but it's like it would take like forever to read it. So if you do have the 15-year anniversary and therefore you can hear, you know, Christopher Lee, rest in peace, him narrating the poem. Another narrator that introduced the film was Patrick Stewart. Yeah. I didn't realize it was Patrick Stewart at the beginning. He's uncredited and on IMDb, but in the original motion picture, he's credited.
Right.
But it really reminds you of what a, you know, personalized soundtrack to a really good animated movie sounds like, because nowadays if you look at, you know, what's come out lately, Emoji Movie, you know, you look at, you know, Despicable Me, which I don't mind Despicable Me at all, but they use, you know, artists, yeah, you know, songs. Trolls is very is, you know, does this a lot, and you know, these were made, you know, these songs were written by Danny Elfman,
right.
And he said it was easy to do it because he felt like Jack Skellington was, you know, a manifestation of himself. And, you know, he wrote all these songs fairly quickly. It took him hardly any time at all.
That's one of the easiest jobs he ever had.
Yeah, and probably one of his most memorable. Yeah. Selleck, is, you know, we talked about Selleck being the director. He also went on to do James and the Giant Peach.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, of course, Coraline. And Coraline's probably, you know, it's a tough call. I really like Coraline, too. But I'd have to say this is better because it just has everything. Yeah. Coraline really doesn't have the
Coraline
soundtrack.
One time. I'd have to rewatch it. But I remember it being pretty good.
I have it, too. I have Coraline, too. So
yeah,
if you, on my Vudu, if you don't have Coraline or you can't find it, I have it. And it's a really cool story. I wish they would make a second one. But I think they started on the project and then they pulled selling off of it. And I forget what he's working on now.
Well, that's the interesting thing about this movie. As popular as Nightmare Before Christmas was and has found a popular status over this 25 years, is Tim Burton made a deal with Disney to never do sequels. And Disney tried. They went to Burton's like, come on, man, let's do sequels because they had these other doors of, you know, Easter and Thanksgiving.
They had 4th of July.
Yeah.
St. Patrick's Day.
And so Jack could have visited these other worlds, but Tim Burton had said, that was one thing I didn't want. I just wanted to allude that this world was there, but I never wanted sequels made. And there has been comics and other storylines done, but never a movie sequel. And there was even talks of maybe TV specials at one time to see Jack visit other worlds, and Tim Burton was like, no, 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 because originally he actually envisioned this movie as a TV special, and then ended up turning into a full-length film instead, because he, when he wrote the poem, he thought, oh, we'll turn it into a TV special, but no, and he was real inspired by Rankin and Bass's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah, that's right.
And the coming Santa Claus is Coming to Town, which was all stop-motion animation, too,
mm-hmm.
and that's what influenced him to make this, and he thought, well, I'll do it as a TV special, and it turned into a movie. When the script got bought by Disney and everything, and he had some success coming off of course, Batman and Beetlejuice.
Oh yeah, Beetlejuice
success to have this movie made. And Tim Burton really wanted to direct it, but he didn't have time because he was working on Batman Returns. Mm-hmm. And then he was getting started to pre-production on Ed Wood right after that. So that's when Henry Selick was hired to direct it. And him and Burton and Selick didn't always get along. Because Selick at first wasn't real happy that Disney promoted the movie with Tim Burton's name on it.
Yeah, they didn't like that.
Because he's like, he wasn't even on set. He only visited, like you said, 5 to 8 days or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he would show up, and I guess Burton is well known to be grumpy, that Burton would kind of show up and he would just complain. He wasn't real positive.
Mm-hmm.
And so Selick wasn't real happy with the way Burton handled things.
In fact, there was some issue with the storyline that he was gonna have the Doctor be Oogie Boogie.
Mm-hmm.
And he got so mad, he kicked a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
And went into, like, a little bit of a fit. So, yeah, he wasn't the most delightful person, it looks like, on set. And,
And Burton is still like that today. There's certain things, like, he doesn't really like to talk about the Batman films and certain movies he's made. This is a movie he'll talk about a little bit more over the years. He's kind of interesting like that. Burton will talk about some things and others, and he's real sarcastically smart-ass. He'll give smart-ass answers to things about films.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that with him. And so he gets a lot of credit for this movie, and in some ways more than he probably should, because, mm-hmm. yeah, he created the poem and the storyline, but he really had very little to do with the initial making of the movie. And from character designs and everything, it was all done outsourced by Disney and their studios and doing the stop-motion animation.
Yeah. It should be story by, you know, Tim Burton, and right. then and produce of course produced by, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you even give him producing, you know, notoriety, but yes, Selling, you know, he was there every day one, minute one, as they say, and you know, all those people that did three poses per second on the stop motion figures. Right. It's like, you know, you. It's a lot that went into this film.
Yeah.
It, even for it to be so short, you know, having 2 years working on every little move, it's crazy.
Like Leica Studios, those films are up to 2 years of work, too.
For oh, that
two
makes sense.
Two strings and all that. And they're remarkable looking. I find it hard when I watch Kubo. It's amazing to me that none of it is CGI. They claim, or so they claim.
Yeah,
but
so
I'm
they
just
claim.
Watching, I'm like, the background, some of that has to be. But they say, no, it's all stop motion. It's spectacular the way
That's
they
crazy.
Do it.
Crazy.
And this movie is like that. This movie has some spectacular set designs. I think the only scene in the film that's not stop motion, that's one long shot, is at the beginning when they pull back from the town. Because mm-hmm. it's basically they built this town set and they just pull the camera back. It's the only scene that's a full shot that's not stop motion animation in the entire film. And we were talking about the songs earlier, and that is the most noticeable thing about the movie. It's been a very popular soundtrack over the years.
Yes.
And I'm with you. I like the intro song from Jack when he goes into Christmas Town. He's
what
is this? That's probably my favorite song in the movie. And the Oogie Boogie song is good, too.
Yeah, the Oogie Boogie song.
And there's some genuinely creepy stuff in this movie. Like, Oogie Boogie as a character is like, he's just this guy in like this bag, but he's really scary. And then at the end, when Jack...
Unwraps
him.
Yeah.
And there's just bugs underneath, and they're all dying and screaming. His voice is changing, and it's really, really kind of scary.
Falling into this pit of molten something that he was going to dump Santa Claus and Sally in.
Yeah, and Dr. Finkelstein, he's like doing these weird experiments on characters. He's really like a Dr. Frankenstein type character.
Yeah,
and he's really like controlling Sally, and they're like, oh, she'll never disobey me again. And it's like really some kind of sadomasochist kind of
and she poisons him just to get out, And, you know, her body, she can, you know, dismember herself because she's full of leaves and
really
stitch herself back together.
For a kid's film.
Yeah, there's heads getting cut off in here. And it's not gory at all, obviously, you know. But it's like, you know, they make it to where it's like fun. You're having fun when all this is going around. Heads are getting cut off.
Because it's bouncy and it's singing. But it's well done. And of course, we didn't even talk the plot, but I think everyone knows the plot of this movie by now. Out of the horror movies we've done this month, I mean, yeah, most people see Nightmare on Elm Street, but almost everyone has seen this. And, you know, and Jack, of course, tries to steal Christmas, and he calls him Sandy Claus instead of Santa Claus, and they capture him. And when they first cap, he sends a lock, shock, and barrel. These three mischievous.
And I didn't know that Locke is Paul Reubens.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's Peep.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah,
a movie with Burton's name on it would cast somebody like Reubens.
Yeah,
and you know they capture the Easter Bunny at first. Jack, and it's funny because Jack, you know, he's the Pumpkin King, right?
Yeah,
but yet for most of the movie, he's kind of like they want you to sympathize with him. He's tired of being the Pumpkin King. He wants something new. That's why he wants to do Christmas.
He's depressed.
But then, like, he pulls his mouth apart really scary to scare the trick-or-treaters to do as I say. And it's really frightening.
Yeah.
And you realize, well, and it gives you that moment where I think it's telling you that Jack, as peaceful as he seems, he's also this really scary guy. This is the guy that rules Halloween Town, the scariest place in the holiday world.
Yeah, man. I mean, he stuffed himself with straw and set himself on fire. You know, he's a badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. He's looking for something different. He's looking for a change. And this is where the argument that, like, I'm with you. I feel like this is a Halloween movie. It's Halloween Town, Halloween characters. If I had to pick, it's like 55% Halloween, 45% Christmas. But people argue the Christmas side, and they make a good argument that Jack, you know, he's trying to, you know, figure out what Christmas means
right.
to this whole film. You know, there's, what does it mean? What does it mean? And so he thinks that if he has all the objects in place, if there's just a guy in a suit with a beard and he's got reindeer and just presents to give out, that Christmas will happen and it will fall in place. And he quickly finds out that
there's more to it.
And at the end, he finds out what that is, and he finds out the true meaning of Christmas, and so does the whole town. And so that's why people argue it's a Christmas movie, because it ends like one. It starts like a Halloween movie, ends like a Christmas movie, just like the poem.
Which is kind of why we chose it for the end of our Halloween month, because we're going to start getting into the, not that we're doing a Christmas month, but we're getting into the holiday season.
Yeah, Target's taking down Halloween stuff right now, probably, and they already had their Christmas stuff like five months ago.
But at the same time, I feel like this is a movie that I'm probably going to reach in my DVD case for in more in October than I am at Christmas.
Yes.
At Christmas, I'm more looking at Jingle All the Way and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation than this, you know? And that's just how I'm thinking. So you can argue either way. And this movie over the years has garnered quite a cult status, but yet also a popularity status. Like, Hasbro put out some action figures for this movie back in 1993 when it came out, and no one ordered them because they weren't sure if the movie was going to be a success. And these things are worth tons now, the first line of Hasbro figures. They go for $200-$400. I think there's one or two. I think Oogie Boogie, because he was bigger, so there's only one to a case, goes for, like, I could be wrong, about $500 or $600 now on its card.
Wow.
So for a long time, people were itching for Nightmare Before Christmas collectibles, and there was nothing out there. There was going to be McDonald's Happy Meals. McDonald's scratched it because they weren't sure if the movie was going to be successful, so that never happened. And then NECA Studios finally got rights, and they reprinted the Hasbro figures and made some, and they've since made, and now there's Nightmare Before Christmas collectibles everywhere. There's Funko Pops, there's toys, there's figures, there's right above me in the studio here, the Hot Wheel cars that my wife bought the set of. You know, so now this movie has garnered a remarkable status of being a collector's market type deal. There are hardcore Nightmare Before Christmas collectors out there now that go after this stuff, and they love every inch of it.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that Nightmare Before Christmas, as far as collectibles, become as popular as some of the genres we love, like Star Wars and Star Trek and Ninja Turtles. And
there's a case for that.
Really love this movie a lot.
Yeah, and you know, they have something in common. They have high valued collectibles, a first edition toy line that, you know, is highly coveted and you know, rarely found. So You could make an argument that is every bit as valuable as those other franchises that are more well known to a lot of other people, you know, as far as like the notoriety of the action figures, not as much as the franchise, but of the action figures in itself.
Yeah, and then another thing about this movie, regardless what Tim Burton says, told Disney, I really think this movie could warrant a really good sequel. You know, I mean, even if it takes a couple years to make it with stop motion animation, I think it opens up to a wonderful idea of Jack visiting another town or something, or what if someone tried to steal Halloween Town? You know,
that's true.
Go in opposite direction.
The return of Oogie Boogie. Yeah. Maybe Oogie Boogie goes to
Oogie Boogie's Revenge.
Yeah, Christmas Town. You
know? And I, for one, I know people say, oh, certain movies don't need sequels, but I think this movie would be open. I would be open to an idea for a sequel in this if it's well written and fun like this one, and come back and revisit these characters or some sort of specials. You know, I think these characters were created in this movie that are really neat characters, and it would be nice to see more of them at some point.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
Yeah, there's like, you know, they've obviously misfired with some sequels. Like, did you ever see Return to Oz?
Yeah, those were terrible.
I liked how they made it kind of dark, but it was overall kind of terrible.
Yeah, but I think they're starting to try to figure out I have hopes for movies like the new Blade Runner stuff, that they're starting to figure out how to make legacy sequels, these movies that come back 20 to 30 years later. I think they're starting to say, this is how we do it. You know, we got to hold true to what made it popular in the first place, and we have to bring back characters they love, but yet pass the torch into new ways. And I think it can be done if it's done properly. And so maybe Tim Burton one day will, and Disney will get together and they'll say, okay, let's go ahead and do a sequel to this. Because I think it would be a fun movie to see more of.
Yeah.
You know? Or maybe we'll get the TV special that Tim Burton always wanted.
Do a TV special.
But I think these characters are too popular to just let him go after one film. You know, I'd like to see more Jack Skeleton and Sandy Claus. And Sally and Dr. Finkelstein.
You know? Dr. Finkelstein.
So it could be fun. So any final thoughts you have on The Nightmare Before Christmas?
No, it's timeless. It's a timeless classic.
It has become timeless.
Yeah, and, you know, it's definitely...
Or we're just getting older and we're starting to say movies that we grew up with are timeless classics.
Yeah, eventually we're going to be like Star Trek, and Beastie Boys' Sabotage is going to be classic music.
Yeah, that's true. But a fun Halloween movie. I will call this a Halloween movie.
Yes.
I think it's more Halloween than it's Christmas. But I get the argument of why people think it's Christmas. I think overall, though, it's definitely a Halloween movie.
Because we're talking about The Nightmare Before Christmas.
That's right.
See? It's not even Christmas yet. It's before Christmas.
That's right.
Yeah.
So,
boom.
If you've never seen it, go watch it. It's very enjoyable.
Absolutely.
I'm sure most people are listening to this show have seen The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, watch it once and then sing along with it the second time that you watch it.
I'm sure it's probably sing along. I think the new Blu-ray has a sing along on it.
Probably.
That seems to be a popular thing with musical Blu-rays now. The Greatest Showman and the other movies have a sing along track on them, so you can dance like Hugh Jackman in your room.
Yes, Hugh Jackman.
Frank would try that.
Yeah, Frank would definitely do it.
I'm telling you, he has a secret YouTube channel where he dances.
It's probably part of his workout, you know, warm up whenever he listens to. Listens to Downtown Abbey.
Oh, Lord. All right, well, let's get into some news this week that we've got going. It's been not a real busy week, but some news. The first news is the Boba Fett movie is 100% dead, according to Kathleen Kennedy. I guess they're focused on The Mandalorian, so that's going to be their new thing. You know, I don't know. I wanted to see a Fett movie, but I guess I'm okay with it not happening. I'm one of the few movies that was okay with Star Wars having a movie every year. And because Solo wasn't what it wanted, now Disney's backing off on their plans. And right now we have nothing planned past Episode 9 next year. And I feel like a little scared.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, where's our Star Wars? I want more Star Wars every year.
I feel like, you know, maybe they go with Kenobi instead as the next one.
Or maybe they're coming up with a whole new plan behind the scenes and are going to announce it at Celebration next year. We just don't know what it is.
Yeah. You know? Like you said, we don't know what happened between, you know, Episode 6 and Episode 7.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like... Or the Mandalorian is Boba Fett. I'm going to stay with that theory, man.
I think it's got to be.
That the Mandalorian is Boba Fett.
It's got to be, man.
You know,
it can't be Django.
But
no way they do Django. You know, they got to do Boba.
Well, Django got his head cut off.
That's right. Be Django. Yeah, it can't be Django.
After Return of Jedi.
Yeah, that's true.
Head, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Boba Fett was lying there holding his dad's head. It was crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to be a bounty hunter when you're dead.
Yeah, you can't hunt bounties. So, and if I could read my own handwriting here in the news. Did you see this image of... Hey, I sent it to you, Matt, or you and Frank. The image of Bane from Gotham?
Yes.
What the hell is that?
It
looks like a bad sci-fi movie.
Oh, how far the tree has fallen from the tree.
I know we talked about the show a little bit on the podcast before, but like... I love Batman, but I can't get behind it. I'm never going to understand the concept of the show where the villains are much older than Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Their origins are completely changed and different. I'm just like... And then I saw this. Bane doesn't come around until many years later in the comics.
Yeah.
Right? And he shouldn't even be around when Bruce Wayne's a teenager. It just looks like... It looks like a bad wrestling outfit or something.
It really does.
Or a bad Van Damme movie or something.
Van Damme movie?
Like Cyborg 2.
Yeah, Cyborg 2.
And,
oh man,
Jesus Christ!
Dude, shout out to Colt 45 doing Cyborg.
You know, I only watched the first three episodes of Krypton, the Superman prequel.
Yeah,
it stepped on a few things of Superman mythology, but not so bad that it made me go, "Oh my God, what are they doing?" But Gotham all the time makes me go, "Oh my God, what are they doing?"
It started off. I felt like it started off promising.
Yeah,
you know, my sister decided that she was going to start watching it, and I came over last night because we're doing Halloween at my parents. She lives over there, and you know, I went upstairs. She's watching Gotham, and it's the episode where you know, Gordon finds out Fish Mooney has the pearls, and you know, he gets into a fight with her guards, and he's going to get taken to get killed. And you know, it's the episode he fake kills Penguin.
Yeah.
And that's a good episode.
Yeah.
And I felt like it started off so strong.
The first season did, yeah.
And I maybe
it was a crime saga.
Yeah.
Then they tried to go, let's see how many Batman villains we introduce. And I think they even named the second season Villains or Rise of the Villains.
Yeah.
It's like I don't know. Thank God it's almost over, and I think this is one of the shows that'll disappear and be forgotten. It'll play on Netflix for years, but I think big Batman fans and the mythos of the Batman are never gonna really ever refer to this show except saying, yeah, oh, it was okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the way it should stand. Next up, we have rumors are that Disney wants to reboot Pirates of the Caribbean. They want to move away from Johnny Depp. They want to come up with a new idea for Jack Sparrow. And, you know, I haven't hated those movies.
Yeah.
They're okay. The first one was fun. I actually liked the last one. I finally watched a Netflix a while back.
Dead Man's Chest.
Yeah, and it was okay. The second and third one weren't that good. Even the fourth one with the mermaids was okay. But maybe it is time to... It's a good concept. And pirates are very popular.
Yeah.
I'd like to... I don't have a problem rebooting it, but I think that don't try to make it silly. If you're going to reboot it, go darker. You know, not super dark.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, like, make it inaccessible to kids. But let's get away from the flamboyant, silly Jack Sparrow. Let's make our Jack Sparrow more of a hero with flaws.
Yeah.
You know? I think, and I think that could be a good idea if they're going to do it. You know,
I agree. I mean, like you, it's like I didn't mind the movies. I just thought it was amazing that this started off as a ride at Disney World and it became this. You know, and so I'm just amazed at how it came.
The first film was arguably a really good adventure film.
Yeah.
I actually liked the first one.
Oh yeah, that's probably the best one.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion. The second one wasn't... I didn't think it was bad.
It was just long.
It was long, yeah.
Like, there's almost 30 minutes of that movie you could have cut out in the second one, where he's rolling down the hill and the pen thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was all pointless, you know? Yeah, that's the only thing with the second one. But not a terrible series of movies, and they've been very successful at the box office. They've made a lot of money for Disney. So I could see why Disney would want to consider rebooting it and keeping the franchise going in some way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we'll see where it goes. And it's just talk right now. It might be a couple years away, but I think it is time to move on from Johnny Depp and do a new Jack Sparrow and do something new with it and see where it goes from there.
And it looks like Johnny Depp's doing Crimes of the Grindelwald.
Yeah.
He's going to be doing Harry Potter.
I guess Harry Potter fans, like hardcore fans,
Harry
don't like that.
Potter.
I don't know. They don't like Depp in those movies. I don't know. Not that hardcore, but
I don't know.
Potter fan.
Gonna have to ask Alex.
Before we get into that Teen Titans news, Wonder Woman got pushed back to summer of 2020.
I saw that.
You know that, I guess that means no DC film in 2019, but you know what? I'd rather them do it right. You know, I'm okay with that. If it takes more time to make a really good Wonder Woman sequel, so be it.
Yeah.
And it's only pushed, everyone's like, oh, it got pushed back a whole year. No, it wasn't coming out till November next year anyway. So it only got pushed back like 7 months. So it's not too bad. But Wonder Woman was very successful when it came out summer last, was it last year or 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
So, you know, if it takes its summer again to be that successful, that's fine. You know, because I think Patty Jenkins is going to make another good film. So, you know, sometimes you have to wait for great things.
It's true.
You know? As long as we don't blow up the world by then.
Yeah,
We'll see Wonder Woman 1984. And lastly, DC announced today that there is a Teen Titans versus Teen Titans Go crossover coming out in 2019. They haven't said whether it's going to be theatrical, whether it's going to be directed to DVD or what, or it's going to be a TV special. But I guess this goes back to where you say at the end of Teen Titans Go, the movie, we see the original Teen Titans in a post-credit scene saying we found a way back. So I'm sure it's going to tie in with that somehow.
Yeah, it's got to.
And now that you say that. This is a cool idea, and it should be fun. The goofy Teen Titans Go squaring off with their more serious counterparts from the original animated series. There's no plot details other than a short teaser that came out that showed nothing, basically.
Yeah.
It was just a credits trailer. And maybe it'll bring back the original Teen Titans by doing this.
That would be cool. Or if they're, like, older and animated, kind of like Teen Titans Judas Contract or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, the Teen Titans are really great characters and have become, arguably, since they were introduced back in the day by George Perez and Marv Wolfman, they have become an extremely popular superhero team over the years. Kids love them, adults love them. They're arguably right up there with X-Men and Fantastic Four, other great superhero teams of our times. So Teen Titans will always be a place for it. And I know the Titans television show is going on, and from all intents and purposes, I've heard good things. I got to get around to subscribing to DC Universe once I've got some money to afford it.
Yeah.
But I've heard good things about the Titans TV show so far, that despite the trailer that people were like, what, fuck Batman, all that, apparently the show's been pretty good. So, you know.
That's optimistic.
And apparently they're introducing Doom Patrol in the live-action show. That alone makes me very interested in checking it out. So that should be a pretty cool thing. So, Teen Titans versus Teen Titans Go, sometime in 2019.
That is cool.
That should be cool. It's a good time to be a comic book fan right now.
It really is.
You know, they're coming out. And before we preview next week's movie, we got a couple of shout-outs to do this week. First off, want to give a shout-out to Yolanda Mazin, who, of course, we gave a shout-out to the show before. She's been a big supporter of us. And if you go on our social media, she did a painting for us in honor of the Rebel Radio podcast. It was like her first dark painting she did, she said, and I've been talking to her. And so we just want to thank her personally for that.
A really cool painting.
It's really cool. I got a real, like, dark superhero villain type vibe from it, because I think that's what she was going for.
Yeah.
I could be totally wrong. Yolanda's like, no, that's not what I was going for. Maybe she, but she really does paint from her heart. She's self-taught. And I guess she was inspired by the movies we talk about and comics and things like that. And it's a really beautiful painting. And you can go on our Instagram I don't know if it's on our Instagram, but I know it's on our Twitter accounts and our Facebook groups. I know I shared it on there. And thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only – I said shout-outs, but I think it's the only shout-out I have this week, really. But I'll give a shout-out to my friend Naomi. He keeps texting me and supporting the show. And we thank her for that. And I will watch Halloween this week when I'm off work. I promise. So let's preview next week's movie. We're going to gear up towards the holiday season. We've got some really cool stuff coming. We've got we're going to be doing some good movies over the next 7 to 8 weeks
as we
get towards the end of the year. But we're gonna kick it off with kind of a darker sci-fi film that's a real favorite of mine that I really like a lot. And a lot of people have seen this, but a lot of people haven't seen it. We're going to do it's directed by Alex Proyas, who did The Crow. But we're going to do his sci-fi film, Dark City.
First, there was darkness. Then came the strangers.
They come when we sleep.
Seeking a cure for their own mortality.
To steal our thoughts.
Our souls makes us different from them.
To shape our memories.
We have much to do.
To take away all that makes us human.
It is time.
Who are they?
But one of us knows their secret.
You saw something, didn't you?
I don't think the sun even exists.
And one of us...
We are running out of time.
Now escape.
...has the power to stop them.
If you've seen Dark City, of course, right? You've never seen
Dark City. I've never seen Dark City.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've never seen Dark City. I thought you had seen it. This is a good movie. It's it kind of came out and it was released in late 97 in limited theaters. But it's but it gets credit as being a 98 release because it went wide in 98 in theaters in 98. And I remember seeing this up in Grand Prairie, Texas. My dad was working out of Grand Prairie, Texas, and we were still living in Houston. And we went up there to see it. And we saw it at an old school theater where the seats are flat, no stadium seating and all that, smelly popcorn and, greasy food and all that.
Nice.
And we've sat there and watched this. And I just remember walking out of that going, man, this is one of the best five movies I've ever watched. And it's unbelievable you haven't seen it. It stars Rufus Sewell. Kiefer Sutherland is in it.
No, Keith Sutherland.
The one always wonderful Jennifer Connelly is in it.
Ooh.
And just a really good movie. So, man, you're in for a treat, man. I can't believe you've never seen this movie, man. And there's a director's cut of it, which is slightly different. It's one of those director's cut where it's not really so much new scenes. It's they kind of re-edited a little bit of it just to make the movie flow better. But it's really well done. And I'm shocked you haven't seen this.
I knew you referenced it a lot whenever we used to play Second Life, and you mentioned that there was a Dark City sim in the game, and I was like, what is that? I thought it was just another game or something, City was a game.
And watch this with your surround sound on, because it's got a booming, fantastic soundtrack on it. It's a really, man, this is a good movie. You're gonna like it.
I trust you.
And I think it's a cheap DVD Blu-ray. I think you can get it for $5 most places, or probably on Vudu for cheap. You'll find it. This is one of those movies that you'll find in the dump bins at Walmart and stuff, and people haven't necessarily heard of it, but a lot of people have heard of it.
Check Prime, because Prime has a lot of thrillers and horror movies on sale for like 99-cent rentals and stuff like that.
So it's a good one. So that we're gonna talk Dark City next week on the show, and
Yes.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
So, that's all we've got today, though, I think, as we get out of here. And we hope you enjoyed Halloween Horrors Month. We enjoyed bringing it to you. It was fun talking some good horror movies and
Heck
things.
Yeah.
And now we'll do some other fun stuff. We've got some interesting movies coming up to talk about here in the next 7 to 8 weeks as we gear up going into 2019 and continue on with the Rebel Radio Podcast. And as always, go to therebelradiopodcast.com, check it out, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff. And, T-shirts for sale there. All the episodes are there. Links to all the apps we're on: Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes. Easy to find the show. Podcast Addict. We're on there. You can subscribe through the links on the website. And thank you as always for supporting the show. And it helps too, especially on iTunes. It's to take 5 minutes, and we don't always push this, but if you can go and leave us a quick 5-star review on iTunes and leave a little note saying if you like the show. Because it helps with the search engines, the iTunes.
Yeah.
The reviews you get up there a little bit, and it helps people find our show. And that small thing, just leaving it takes you 5 minutes to leave us a 5-star review, means as much to us as if you were to buy a shirt. And it supports the show. We do appreciate it. So you got anything left to say before we get out of here?
No, man. It's just glad to have done an episode that makes wounds ooze and skin crawl.
That's true. And the oogie boogie.
Yes.
So until next time, as always, thank you for listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. And this has been Mark.
This is Matt.
And as always, just go there and do it.
This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Man. I love Houston. I love podcasting. But what I really love is the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Sam Jones, Flash Gordon. And this is Rebel Radio. podcast.
Understand. There's a curse upon me. I change into a wolf.
Listen to me, Frank. I saw my father become obsessed by his power. He died a horrible death.
There's no need for us all to storm after her. She'll come in if I ask her.
Why should we treat her so fancy? She's a Frankenstein.